Hello, folks. This is Will Aitchison. I have a special edition of our podcast at LRIS. We are thrilled to have an interview with Randy Dubrava, who's an attorney down in Texas. I'll give you more about his background in just a moment, but I want to tell you what the podcast is about first. Probably there is no rule that exists in the police employment environment today that is more disconcerting both to officers and to their employers than what's known as the Brady Rule. The Brady Rule, as it's been interpreted and applied, has cost at least law enforcement officers their jobs when they have been terminated because somebody has decided, whether it's their employer, whether it's a district attorney, that they are unable to testify. There's a fairly bombshell Brady case that has come to us from the Texas Court of Appeals, and our guest, Randy Dubrava, is one of the attorneys who handled it. Randy is an attorney with almost 20 years of experience in Texas, graduated from the University of Texas Law School. For those of you unfamiliar with it, the law school's a lot better than the football team this year. It's a great, I'm sorry, Randy. It's a great law school. One of the top 10 law schools, and Randy works for what's known as TMPA. So, first of all, Randy, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
And Randy, start with, will you tell us what TMPA is and what it does?
TMPA is a law enforcement labor association. We represent over 24,000 cops here in the state of Texas who are our members. So we provide them, you know, with collective bargaining and legal defense and anything that any other labor association would help out their members with.
Let me ask you a question about that, because we have listeners from all over the country. Most cities and counties in Texas do not collectively bargain, but some do. How did that happen?
Well, in the state of Texas, when the legislature passed statutes allowing for collective bargaining, the power was given to local governmental entities to make a decision on whether or not they were going to adopt bargaining. And how that is done, though, is through a local election at the local level. So that's why only those local communities that have decided to adopt bargaining through an election have bargaining in the state.
And any idea what the count is as to how many of Texas's cities and counties have bargaining?
Oh, I want a rough estimate. I'd say about 30, 32, somewhere around there.
32 out of hundreds, correct?
Right. All correct. Right.
Now, Brady case in which you were involved comes to us from Georgetown, Texas. Where is Georgetown? Orient that for us.
It's directly north of Austin, Texas, which is in the central heart of Texas. It's about 40 minutes north of Austin, Texas.
And Georgetown had an officer, maybe still has an officer, by the name of Stephanie Brown. How did she come to be investigated?
Well, she was in a relationship with a Round Rock attorney by the name of Eric Poteet. And she no longer wanted to be in that relationship, called it off, and he got mad and retaliated by filing a complaint against her with her police department.
So he is a police officer himself, correct?
Yeah, a former police officer, that is correct.
Former police officer. And what were his allegations?
He alleged that she had taken his prescription pain medication and his prescription sleeping pills while over at his house, and alleged that she had ingested a controlled substance, mescaline.
And I take it that triggered an internal affairs investigation. How did that come out?
Well, the internal affairs investigation affirmed the allegations and added another one of untruthfulness, finding that she had lied about whether or not she had knowingly taken mescaline.
And what was the department's disciplinary decision?
The department issued an indefinite suspension, which is akin to a termination.
And Brown appeals under the Texas Civil Service Act. And she ends up before a hearings officer. How does that happen? What's the procedure there? How's the hearing officer selected? What authority does the officer have? That sort of thing.
The officer has the ability to either appeal before a civil service commission, which is appointed by the city, or appeal to an independent hearing examiner, which is selected in accordance with AAA's procedures for selecting arbitrators, basically.
And Brown ends up before a hearing officer slash arbitrator, is that right?
That's correct.
And while her appeal is pending, what did the police chief do that becomes the heart of this case?
Well, after they had completed testimony in the appeal hearing before the hearing examiner, but before the decision had been issued, the chief, I guess he didn't think that he had done very well in the hearing. So it was like 2 days after the hearing, he goes and meets with the county attorney and the district attorney, gives them his charging letter, and sits there and tells them that he believes that she was untruthful during the course of the investigation. And so they agreed to write him a letter that says we won't be able to put her on the stand due to Brady issues because she was untruthful.
Does that letter, or the letters that they send, does that end up before the original hearing officer?
No, because the original hearing officer had, that hearing was closed, but the decision had not been issued yet.
And what result is there in that hearing?
Well, the hearing officer comes back, I guess it was right before, though, the hearing officer issues his decision, the chief writes a letter to Officer Brown and tells her, hey, even if you win this arbitration, you're going to be fired again because the DA and the county attorney have given me a letter that says they won't put you on the witness stand, so you're not qualified to be an officer anymore. And then, so a few days later, then the arbitrator decision comes down and finds that she was not untruthful, that she did not knowingly ingest mescaline, but that she had taken the prescription pain medication and the prescription sleeping pills for an injury that she had incurred, but that she also had her own prescription for those same items, and she had taken them because she was at her boyfriend's house at the time and didn't have hers available. He reduced the indefinite suspension down to a 15-day suspension.
Then what happened?
Then the next day, the chief fires her again, gives her a letter that says, you are fired because you are not qualified to be an officer. This is a non-disciplinary termination is the word that he used. And so you are not going to be entitled to any kind of civil service appeal to appeal my decision.
Now, if you go through there's something when I read this case, there was something that was kind of a disconnect for me. It seems to me that if you're an employer or a labor organization and you go through this hearing officer process and you get a final and binding decision from a hearing officer, and the ruling is that Brown is not untruthful and committed at what would seem to be a technical violation of the rules by taking her boyfriend's pills for which she had a prescription, it would seem to me that, particularly if you're the city, you go back to the district attorney and the county attorney, hand them the hearing officer's decision, and say, all right, we've had this hearing, and here's the result. Now what? Did something like that happen?
I don't know if they did that. I know our association tried to set up a meeting with the county attorney at the time, and the county attorney would not return our phone calls or anything. So we never were able to set up a meeting with the district attorney to try and have a meeting with them. We did have a meeting with the county attorney, and the county attorney said that they were not going to recant their letter. They were going to just go ahead and stick by it.
All right. So you have a second event. It's a termination, Although the city is saying it's not a disciplinary termination, this is where it may not be initially where you get involved, but this is where TMPA becomes involved and what leads to this really significant Court of Appeals decision. What happens procedurally after this second termination?
Well, Officer Brown makes a request to have an appeal in accordance with the civil service process to the Civil Service Commission. And that request for an appeal was denied. And so Officer Brown, we filed a lawsuit on her behalf asking the district court to enjoin the termination and to protect her rights.
And take us through what the lower court says, the district court says, and then eventually what the Court of Appeals says on this.
Well, in Texas, the city filed a plea to the jurisdiction. And in Texas, what you have to basically saying is there, you have no claim, no cause of action. We did it right. And the district court agreed. The district court said, yeah, since the DA and county attorney won't take this person on as a witness, she's no longer qualified to be an officer. Therefore, this was not disciplinary action, is non-disciplinary, and I'm going to throw out your lawsuit. So we took it on up to the Austin Court of Appeals, which is the third court, and the third court reversed the district court, holding that this was disciplinary action. It was based upon the exact same conduct that had already been ruled upon by the hearing examiner, and remanded the case back to the district court with instructions that it needed to go to the Civil Service Commission for final determination.
I thought the court's discussion about the possibility that the city would be evading the finality of the first decision in Brown's case, I thought that was pretty interesting. Can you talk to that for a little bit?
Well, basically, I think the court said, let me think if I remember exactly. I have this right here in front of me. What the court said was that instead of abiding by the hearing examiner's award, which was final and binding on all parties, Chief Nero allowed the unilateral decision of elected officials to circumvent the protections of the Civil Service Act. So, the court was basically saying, we're not going to allow these elected county attorneys and district attorneys to just come in and review the exact whatever evidence you want to give them and decide that, hey, they're untruthful, and so now they're not qualified to be officers anymore.
So this is actually it's not only a restriction on the city's disciplinary authority. This is actually a comment by a court as to the obligations that folks like a district attorney or the county attorney have in a Brady situation where you've got an independent finding that there was no untruthfulness. Am I hearing that right?
Well, I don't know if that would be, because I know it could be interpreted that way. I don't think it should be stretched that far in terms of the reach of that opinion. But I think what they are saying is that the county and district attorney shouldn't get involved in local employment decisions. And that's how I read this.
But ultimately, just talking this thing out, ultimately, the county and the district attorney aren't bound by a disciplinary appeal involving the city and TMPA and Brown. Wouldn't that be the case?
That is correct. So, even if the city, the hearing examiner determines that this person was truthful, the county and district attorneys can still decide not to do their jobs and not put this person on the stand. Although I think we all know that Brady does not require that. All Brady requires is some disclosure issues, and if the hearing examiner has already determined that she wasn't truthful, it would be up to a judge to decide whether or not that those facts were going to be admissible or even had to be disclosed in a subsequent criminal proceeding.
And I think there's a shorthand, an unfortunate shorthand out there for Brady that exists in some parts of the country. And that shorthand is that if you somehow get designated as a Brady officer or put on a Brady list, that means you can't testify. But as you're saying, all that really means is that the employee's disciplinary records are potentially subject to disclosure to the court that'll then do a hearing, usually an in-camera hearing, that may result in those records being disclosed to a criminal defendant who may or may not decide to try to use them to impeach the officer. And the use of those of that information as impeachment may or may not be successful. So it's not like there's a only one-step Brady process, right?
Yes, absolutely. You're correct. And what kind of gets me upset is about the whole Brady problem that we're dealing with from an officer's viewpoint is the prosecutors are always putting up witnesses on the stand who are going to be subject to cross-examination. And to then say they're not going to put an officer on the stand because they're going to be subject to some allegation of untruthfulness is just, to me, a breach of their obligation to the public.
Okay, now back to Brown's case. So the Court of Appeals sends it back down to the lower court, basically saying you need to hold a hearing here on the second termination. Then something significant happens with the DA and the county attorney, right?
That is correct. The DA and the county attorney have both sent letters to Officer Brown telling her that they are withdrawing their previous letters, that they are in that they are not going to put her on their Brady list, that they will allow her to testify. And so now the whole reason for the termination has gone away.
But has the city taken Brown back to work?
No, they still have not taken Brown back to work. And in fact, they have last week they filed a request to our Texas Supreme Court for them to review the Court of Appeals decision. And then the Supreme Court will have to decide if they're going to accept it for review or not.
Boy, I'm reminded, I can't even remember who it is who wrote this. I think it was James Joyce. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. I mean, this sounds like the city really wants to keep Officer Brown fired, doesn't it?
The city does, or the chief does, or they're just supporting the chief. So I don't know what the motivation is behind this, but it definitely looks like they don't want to follow the law and haven't tried to follow the law from the beginning.
I assume the Texas Supreme Court has discretionary review, meaning it might or might not take the case, and that it probably doesn't take many of the cases it's asked to hear. Is that right?
That's correct. They have discretionary review, and I think they take somewhere between 8 to 10% of the cases that they're asked to review.
Let me close, Randy, by asking you for an observation that isn't Stephanie Brown specific. You guys represent police officers, deputy sheriffs all over the state. How pervasive are these Brady problems in Texas?
It's a big issue right here, right now. We even had a new county attorney up in, I forget the county that was in now. When she took office, she went through all their files and came across all these evaluations that prosecutors would write up on these forms when police officers would testify, basically evaluating them as witnesses. You know, and one of the categories that they had was fudge good or fudge bad. And so she took all those and that were attorney work product, private information, and sent it out to the entire defense bar.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, and it's discussed in every major city and county in the state on a regular basis.
Did the forms really say fudge good or fudge bad?
Yes.
All right. Well,
I don't know what that means, but the prosecutors in that county were trying to evaluate who were witnesses that were helpful in getting their people convicted, you know, getting them convictions. And that was one of the categories they had on the form.
Well, Randy, I think we'll end on the fudge good, fudge bad note. Hey, thanks a lot for taking time out of your day to do this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Well, you have a good day. Hope to see you again.
Okay. So long.
Nice conversation with Randy Dubrava. And just a little postscript about Brady. We're only in the beginning stages of the law surrounding Brady-less. We're starting to see first-time decisions from all over the country. Remember, about 3 months ago, we saw a decision from the New Hampshire Supreme Court ordering a prosecutor to take two officers off of a Brady list. One thing is becoming pretty clear. We are seeing neutral third parties, courts, arbitrators, legislators, becoming increasingly wary of the seemingly unbridled discretion given to prosecutors to put an officer on a Brady list and thereby impact or potentially end the officer's career. That pushback is coming in the form of amendments to statewide Peace Officer Bill of Rights and arbitrator decisions and court decisions putting officers back to work. Just hold on. We're going to see many more cases like this. And with that, we'll see you next time. This is Will Aitchison signing off.